A little geometry quiz for you this morning. The shortest distance between two points is a straight line. Very good. And this is one of the most elementary principles of geometry, and probably one of the few things we learned in school that still has practical day-to-day value. When we are planning a trip in the car, for instance, we want to go by the route that will get us there the most quickly, which is usually also the shortest route. So we're always glad when there's a highway or an interstate which leads us directly from point A to point B. Now, in the olden days, we relied on directions given to us by the friend or relative that we were visiting. Or maybe we would look at our trusty Rand McNally Road Atlas, or pull out one of many AAA maps we kept in the glove compartment. When we entered the computer age, things got easier. Remember MapQuest? We would print out the pages with turn-by-turn directions and try to keep them close at hand as we navigated, but invariably they fell down into the passenger well. And so now we have entered the modern age of GPS and Google Maps. We can just type in the address of our destination and we will be guided as we drive. We can sync our Google Maps from our phone to the display monitor in the car, and the map will appear to show us where we are and where our next turn is coming. And if by chance there is some traffic or other obstacle causing a delay, we will automatically be directed to the quickest possible route. And when the kids in the back seat start getting antsy and ask the inevitable question, there yet, we can tell them exactly how many more minutes before we arrive. Now, the technology for self-driving cars has already arrived. And I predict that in the very near future, young people will find driving a car as strange as writing a check, using a payphone, typing on a manual typewriter, or telling time on an analog clock. We have all grown accustomed to this efficiency when we travel. One thing that drove me bonkers when I went on a mission trip to Kenya several years ago was that in their culture, they do not have the same need to leave and arrive on time without taking unnecessary detours. In fact, the later you were, the more likely that you would make an unnecessary detour. In our culture, a successful trip is one which has gone according to our plan with no delays, detours, or unscheduled stops, and arriving on time. You know, I'm looking out and seeing some of you looking at your spouses. And unfortunately, especially lately, air travel has been iffy. Flying to anywhere from Albuquerque involves making a connection. And it only takes one delayed flight to mess up an entire itinerary. Now, Dave and I discovered this recently when we missed an outbound connecting flight and found that the airline had therefore canceled our return reservations. Cost us an extra $700 to get home by a different airline. And if you're curious, I'll tell you later. When something happens to cause an unscheduled stop or our arrival is delayed, we have to spend hours trying to patch up our travel plans, we get crabby, impatient, and angry. Even so, with our modern technology and transportation systems, there is hardly a spot on the globe we couldn't get to within a week at the outside. Therefore, it is hard for us to imagine the journey of the Israelites so long ago, which is reported to have taken 40 years of wandering around in the desert. And the actual distance that they had to cover was not very great. It was less than 500 miles. So even if they had taken a rather slow pace and traveled entirely by foot, it should not have taken them any more than a few months. Yet, as the Israelites followed the fiery pillar that God gave to guide them, it took them 40 years of wandering in the wilderness to get to the promised land. Now, if the shortest distance between point A and point B is a straight line, why would God send them on a route that was designed to take them the longest possible way and exposing them to all sorts of dangers and hardships? Now, the reason why we are so puzzled by this is that, once again, we think of a journey is getting there by the fastest possible means. However, in the case of the Israelites, we're forgetting one crucial element. The most difficult part of this journey was not physical, but spiritual. The Israelites had been slaves in Egypt, and that was the only life they knew. Although they had been cruelly oppressed, for them, it felt familiar and therefore secure. So when we read the stories of the Exodus and the wilderness journey, we find that at every small obstacle, the people were ready to turn back to be slaves again in Egypt. They were God's chosen people, yet they had no idea how to be free. They had always been given their food and shelter by their masters. They had no idea how to fend for themselves. And most importantly, they did not know how to trust God. Moses often complained bitterly to God that these people God had called him to lead were very stubborn and willful. Every time Moses had his back turned, they pulled another stunt. Like the time he went up on the mountain to speak to God and receive the Ten Commandments, he came back down to discover the people had made a golden calf and were dancing around it and worshiping it. The Israelites were very slow to learn the lessons that God wanted to teach them in the wilderness. The journey would take as long as it needed to for them to learn how to trust God and to trust God's chosen leaders. The 40 years that the Israelites spent wandering in the wilderness was not wasted time. Each obstacle was an opportunity for the people to better understand God and their relationship to God as the chosen people. When they were hungry, God provided them with food. When they were thirsty, God provided them with fresh water. When people began to argue and fight amongst themselves, God empowered their leaders to make peace. So, this congregation, the Rio Rancho Presbyterian Church, has started on its own version of the wilderness journey. And that is the process of saying goodbye to a beloved pastor who's been with you for many years. And I don't even know how long Kathy was here. 10 years, okay. The journey continues as you will seek a new pastor to serve your congregation. And there's already been a lot of discussion about what it will take to find a new pastor and how long it will take. And all sorts of emotions and feelings are stirring in the congregation, which in some ways are similar to feelings of grief that we have when someone dies. Sadness, anxiety, uncertainty, and fear. And these feelings are common in all congregations when a beloved pastor leaves. People are suddenly called upon to take on new responsibilities that they've never done before. Questions arise and, oh, Pastor Kathy's not here to answer them. And one of the ways that churches typically want to resolve this discomfort is to cut through all of the required red tape of the search process and get a new pastor installed here in record time. In other words, they want to find the shortest distance between point A and point B. Well, I would like to encourage you to see this from a different perspective. The task that this church faces is not simply to get through the search process and install a new pastor. Just as there were lessons that the Israelites had to learn as they were wandering in the desert, there are things that congregations need to learn during a pastoral vacancy. And essentially, they are the same lessons. One of those lessons is not to look back. When a church has had a pastor who is very well liked and has served for a long time, there is a natural tendency to look back at that time with very tender feelings. And one of the hardest parts about having a pastor leave is following the rules about separation. It's hard for you, and it's even harder for Pastor Kathy. And I know you've already been told about this several times, especially if you have been reading your weekly witness. And although Kathy may be in town for a few more months, she will not be available for any pastoral duties. No weddings, no funerals, no counseling, and probably not even social visits. This seems very harsh, but it's important. It takes time to loosen the bonds between a pastor and a congregation. And if a new pastor arrives while the congregation is still clinging to the way Pastor Kathy did it, that new pastor will probably only be around a very short time. And it's not uncommon for a church to go through several short-term pastorates after a beloved pastor has left. And you don't want that to happen. Another lesson which the Israelites learned in the wilderness was how to trust God to meet their needs. And this is also important for congregations during a pastoral vacancy. People never realize how much their pastor does for them until they are left to fend for themselves. But in this respect, I think this congregation is better prepared than most. This church has many capable and willing leaders. People learn how to do things they never imagined themselves doing. New leaders emerge. The things get organized. Everyone pitches in to help. Now, last Sunday was a grand illustration of this. You guys got a head start with the Great Sunflower Tie-Dye Project. I have done some tie-dyeing in my day, and it's not a simple process. And how you all managed to process that many shirts while keeping it all a secret from Pastor Kathy should give us all the confidence we need to know that things will be well. And of course, the big party afterward with all of the wonderful food and everything that was just organized with such great precision is another good example. No one can predict how long it will take before this congregation finally feels settled and stable again. But I can promise you, it will take less than 40 years. I know that Stephen Rhodes, the Santa Fe Presbytery stated clerk, has warned you about the shortage of ministers compared to the number of churches that are seeking. Now, I believe that this is the kind of church that every pastor wants to serve. I think you will have many qualified candidates to choose from. And fortunately, Rio Rancho Presbyterian Church has already secured the services of a capable transitional pastor who will begin in October. And one of the main roles of the interim pastor, I still call it an interim pastor, is to take the heat off the pulpit nominating committee so that things can go in an even pace and happen as they're supposed to happen. Now, I'd like to encourage you all to try not to focus too much on getting there, but instead think about the journey itself. Instead of clinging to the past or jumping ahead to the future, stay in the present and make the most of it. It is not wasted time, but time that is rich with opportunities for spiritual discovery and growth. And when that day finally comes and a new pastor is installed, you will not regret the time it took to get from point A to point B. And once again, I promise, it will take less than 40 years. Amen.